Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You. We bring you fascinating stories of successful entrepreneurs, professionals, and all that is happening in the corporate world. Today we have Abhinav Sinha, a millennial who has over the last decade put together an absolutely incredible company on money transfer. Abhinav, welcome to
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
So happy to have you here.
Thank you so much. The pleasure is all mine.
So, Abhinav, you have had an amazing educational experience at Birla Institute of Engineering, and then you worked with Oracle. And then I think you founded 6T Telecom Solutions.
My elder brother founded 6T. My elder brother and I co-founded our present startup together.
Okay. And then you founded Eco.
Yes, we did.
So, did you always want to be an entrepreneur?
To share my story, not at all.
Okay.
I think the entrepreneurial sting was more there in my brother. So he started 6D in 2002, and I passed out of my engineering 2003, and I got a really nice campus recruitment into Oracle. And we come from a my father was a government servant, and having a job at Oracle. And I'm the youngest in my family. I have an elder brother and an elder sister. And my job in Oracle gave me a salary which was more than my father, mother, my elder brother, who was an entrepreneur, and my sister. So they all thought that, Abhinav has a great job and he should continue doing it. And so I did continue with Oracle for about a year and a half. But after that, there was Abhishek, my elder brother, had started 6D. And Abhishek is also senior from college. So some of my friends were introduced to Abhishek, and so my friends actually quit their jobs that they got out of campus and joined 6D about a year before I did. And so it was my brother's organization. He had co-founded it, and my friends, some of my very close friends, were working for 6D, and they more than Abhishek actually pushed me that, why don't I take the jump? And eventually my parents are also okay for me to kind of go ahead and join 6T. And I did. After about a year and a half of working at Oracle, I did join 6T. It was quite a journey. It's quite a journey.
And then what prompted you to start EKO? You pronounced EKO or Echo?
Echo. It is really, we wanted Echo to Echo, ECHO. And I have a close friend, he's a film director. And he gave me the suggestion that I shouldn't spell it as ECHO. So we went ahead and stylized it as EKO. It's Echo, and we really wanted to echo across the country. In our last startup, which was 6D, we used to make a lot of software. And so we were a bunch of engineers, who were there as the early employees in 6D. So we would make a lot of software and sell it to mobile network operators across the world. And India was fairly competitive in the early 2000s on the telecom sector. So we really couldn't have a lot of business in India. So we started doing a lot of business in Middle East, Bangladesh, Southeast Asia. And telecom industry was going through this prepaid revolution where early 2000, the entire telecom industry went from a recharge industry to a chota recharge industry, from a scratch card to a easy recharge kind of a thing, where if you remember in about early 2000, people would go to these retail outlets and buy scratch cards. You had to scratch these cards and kind of SMS those 16 digits to recharge one's phone. But if you walk into a retail outlet today, you can just go ahead and tell him any denomination and say you can get a recharge.
Or do it online.
So really the fact that, the scratch cards were going off, the denominations, so the recharge was getting independent of the denominations. We were actually building those solutions for mobile network operators and empowering the mobile network operators in Middle East, Southeast Asia, etc. And it got us to understand how beautiful it was to convert physical cash into digital talk time. And, then it was very useful. And it was really the implementation of this product in a lot of mobile network operators. Both Abhishek and I started to think a lot about, what if the physical money doesn't get converted into talk time, but gets converted into real money. And there was a lot of conversation in the country around financial inclusion and, a lot of Indians not having a bank account. And so we thought that, you know, why don't we actually, you know, there was certain developments which were happening in our last startup. And we decided, two of us decided that, you know, we would want to do this all together. And the idea really was that, you know, if a certain technology backbone could spread telecom across the country, why can't a similar backbone spread financial services and banking across the country? That was really the insight that we brought in when we started in 2007.
Okay. So, would this be probably, you know, when you're talking of EKO, of transferring or ECO transferring money, how does it work?
So, we are, you know, in one sentence, we are the Western Union for domestic money transfers. So, people...
Take us through one transaction.
Yeah. So,
I want to transfer money to you.
Absolutely. So, what happens is, the big macro that even in 2019 that ECO works in, is that 80% of working Indians in 2019 continue to earn in cash. And most of these people who are earning in cash across the country are typically first or second generation migrants. So you see a lot of urbanization happening in our country, a lot of people migrating from typically the eastern or central part of the country into the north or the west or the south of the country. And so let's assume one guy who's, let's say, migrated from, let's say, eastern UP or Bihar, and is in Delhi and has earned 25,000 rupees, wants to send 10,000 rupees back home. There are in ECO has now empowered over about 20,000 just retail outlets in Delhi where you could actually go. So you have cash in your hand, which you earned. You can go to this retail outlet. This retailer has been empowered with the platform on ECO side, where you can go to the retailer, give him the cash and tell him the bank account that you wish to remit to. So let's say if I want to remit to my wife, who has an access to a bank account in Bihar, I can mention her account number to the retailer. The retailer takes in cash and there is an instant transfer that happens into the recipient's bank account, where the recipient can walk into a bank branch, ATM, or if there is an ECO outlet, and take the money out.
So these are... So you are here, they can also take it out of another outlet.
Yeah, so what happens is we are able to remit money into a bank account, and then we are also enabled with, there is a National Payment Corporation of India enables with Aadhaar enabled payment systems. So we are able to get people into our outlets. You know, they have to put their thumbprint to authenticate themselves, and a bank account gets debited. So we are able to cash in for remittance and as well as cash out for remittances today. That's really what the transaction is. And so in many ways, you know, you can call us tellers on the cloud. You can call us ATMs on the cloud. But really what we are trying to solve is that there's a lot of capital investment that is required. Either you put up a bank branch or an ATM. And we are saying there are millions of small businesses who deal with cash. There are millions of people who are earning in cash. And these guys are way better service providers as trying to go to an ATM or trying to go to a bank branch. These guys are open from 6 in the morning all the way to 10 at night. Very convenient to get to. You know, people don't end up spending long time in long queues.
Yeah.
So we're fairly convenient as a service to the target segment that we offer.
Because I understand a lot of the migratory labor and workers who come, say, to Delhi, when they have to remit their monthly salary back, they are paying as much as 10% to transfer their money.
That is absolutely correct.
And it's still going on.
It is. And so if they go by informal channels, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, they pay a very large portion. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the channels that we operate, the customers end up paying 1% or sub 1% of the transaction value. And it is fairly, one, it's value for money.
Yeah.
It is fast, it's instant, it's secure. They don't have to rely on informal channels. And that's really the reason why, whether it's been ECO or all the other players in our industry, have able to formalize this industry and also scale it to us to an extent in India.
Very interesting. But this is a very, very highly regulated space. You know, your primary regulator must be the central bank.
RBI.
So how do you cope with all the regulations? Is it a challenge or is it?
It is. I think it is very, very challenging. And as an entrepreneur who did not come from financial services, I think we just took regulations as, we didn't understand what really regulations mean and what, how difficult at times it gets to move around or get one's hands around it. From 2007 to all the way to 2019, I think lots of ups and downs when it comes to regulations. But I think if I see it from a 30,000 level, it has all moved in the right direction in this country. I think as an entrepreneur, my only appeal is I wish it moved faster at the rate and which at which an entrepreneur desires. I think it takes a little bit of time. But I guess that's what Indian market is all about.
So the move made 5 years ago by our Prime Minister on all the Jan Dhan accounts and you know, empowering the weak for financial inclusion, that must have given a big boost to your business.
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that we realized what used to happen, even before Jan Dhan, people would remit. Hmm. But let's say if I wanted to remit to my wife, I would actually not remit to my wife, but would remit to another person who lives in the village and ask him to take the money out and give it to my wife. So there was this friend in the middle or the man in the middle kind of a scenario. But now that there is bank accounts at both ends, people are able to remit to the person who they wish to remit to. So there is privacy, there is no lack of transparency in the money getting kind of, you know, to the final recipient.
And the fact that you say that your approved distributor can almost function like an ATM, the need for expensive ATMs can also be reduced, especially in far-flung areas.
Absolutely. There was this talk that Nandan had given a couple of years back, you know, where he said that, you know, India needs a billion ATMs. That is absolutely true. And very interestingly, there's been a lot of study that has been done in the financial inclusion payment space, which says that if the penetration of ATM increases, digital payments adoption increases. So it's counterintuitive. And the penetration of ATMs in India is really, really bad. It is way bad as compared to even similar economies like Brazil or Turkey. And which actually leads to a lot of lack of the digital payments adoption in this country.
So over the last 10 years, you know, ECHO has really started to empower a lot of people in this country. Where do you think the digital revolution is taking us or taking India?
We've over the last about 12 years, we've touched, I think, about close to about 50 million plus lives.
Amazing.
And, remittance is definitely one of the primary services that we do, but there are other services that we also provide. And over a period of time, we've touched more than about 50 million people. As far as digital is concerned, I think every move that this country is taking is in the right direction. You know, newer technologies like, you know, for instance, earlier, people would remit using money orders. That's extinct.
I agree.
Right? It took 15 days. Then we had NEFT transfers, which took, I think, 3 hours. Today, we are at IMPS. I'm here sharing that, you know, we really remit with the blink of an eye. I have user stories, you know, where the sender of the money is standing in Gurgaon and the recipient is standing in the queue at an ATM in Banaras. And there is an instant transfer. And so I think the fundamental rails are really nice. I think UPI is revolutionary. And I do believe that one thing that we definitely have to plug is something that I shared before, is that how do you make a very large number of people who are earning in cash to not earn in cash? And I think that is really taking birth because 80% of job generation in India is also informal. So I think, you know, we got to figure out, I think there's got to be policy and regulatory intervention where some of that changes into a lot more formal employment from a formal dissemination of salaries, etc. But at the same time, you know, whether it is ECHO or other entrepreneurs, you're not waiting for the policy or the regulatory interventions to come in. We are still building solutions for smaller businesses to disburse their wages and everything in electronically. So we are not definitely waiting for any of that to happen. We'll continue building. I think the right intervention may actually fasten the process.
You know, you very casually mentioned 50 million. You know, for our listeners, just to give a perspective, I was reading somewhere, the global number of customers Amazon Prime has is 100 million.
Sure.
Right? So, if Amazon Prime, which is the 800-pound gorilla in the world, they have 100 million Prime customers. You are touching 50 million. That's amazing. Well done.
Yeah, thank you.
That's really amazing. So, a couple of more questions on the platform. You know, you spoke about NEFT and the other forms of transfer, and I use these quite regularly. Do you see these as competition?
Not at all. We actually leverage all of these things.
Okay.
Actually, our solution is built on top of NEFT, IMPS, RTGS, UPI. So these are the rails on top of which, you know, we create our apps which assist either the end consumer or the retailer to make those transactions happen. Mm-hmm.
Because IMPS, the PSS is an amazing platform.
Beautiful.
I've used it. You know, if I go to service my car, I send my driver to find out the amount, and then I just transfer the money to his account.
That is correct.
Immediately.
That is correct.
And that's how quick it has become.
Yes.
There are many money transfer platforms. You know, when we started our discussion, you said we're like the Western Union. How are you different?
Where are we different? I think there are a lot of smaller things. I don't think so there is one silver bullet answer where we are different. Let me start from the internal organization perspective. One is we believe in being people-less and paperless.
Mm-hmm.
What it does is that it forces us to create processes which are empowering for the end customer. So, for instance, if I remove all the people on our back end, there is no opportunity for my product guys to design processes which get them to take decision on behalf of the retailer or the end consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And just by having this principle or mantra within Echo to be people-less and paperless, we have over a period of time designed processes which lead to empowerment of the end consumer and the merchant. And I think there are, you know, for example, the process to file a complaint, the process of escalating it, the process of learning. We are just continuously looking at every process and saying, take the person out and take the paper out. And what we are experiencing is the amount, and because there is, you know, the technology revolution in general in the last 10 years has been fantastic. So we are today able to design processes which take the person and the paper out, and thereafter designing processes which are much scalable. And the reason we need this in a country like India is it's just difficult to do the distribution. Mm. And I'm sure you would have realized in your experiences too. It's so difficult to put 10,000 retailers in Delhi and then go ahead and put 10,000 retailers in Chennai. This is a tough job. And kind of trying to do all of that in a seamless manner, keeping the cost low and trying to create a distribution across the country. So I think the beauty is, at least when it comes to Echo, I think the beauty is in how we tell ourselves it has to be people-less and paperless, which leads to building processes and product which empower the end consumer in the product.
Mm-hmm.
If you really look, sometimes we do get compared to other competitors, on price and things like that. But I think the reason Echo's managed to survive, managed to scale and touched more than 50 million people, I think eventually we're just empowering those guys, and our platform is just opening up every day to make sure that they are empowered. The other thing that we also do is that, while we run this service, which is branded by Echo, we also have completely opened up our platform. So we have a very large developer community that we've built around Echo. So we actually, through our development platform and our developer community, we enable creation of Echo's competitor within our ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
So just to get a distribution across the country, we realized that, Echo can't do this alone. So we created, we've created 200 Echo's competition within our ecosystem, which covers all of India. So it's not only Echo and Echo's brand that goes across the length and breadth of the country, but there are 200 other competition of Echo powered by Echo's platform who reach to all corners of this country. And I think, so it goes back to really saying empower the end consumer, advance, empower the retailer, advance, empower another entrepreneur who wants to get into a similar business.
Mm.
And it kind of spreads.
Because I remember you talking about this open platform at a session where I was hearing you. And would love to understand at some stage,
sure,
offline, on how do you empower.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about some of the key challenges you face as you have built your business.
Sure.
You're very, very young and you started 12 years ago. So it's been an amazing journey. What have been some of your challenges?
I think different phases of the company has brought us to face different challenges. I think, while it's been 12 years, I think the I think the problem, I'll try and go back from today and try and remember all the 12 years. But I think fundamentally the challenge that Echo and I face in scaling up is really maybe the third round of team building in the last 12 years. Okay. I think just to build the right team and who are passionate enough to take it to the next, how do you get to the 10x growth? That's the problem which is there, which wakes me up at midnight right now. The problem statement that we were facing about 3 years back is how do you become very large to be a significant player?
Mm-hmm.
And, at that point in time is where we actually, our strategy was to open up the platform. So around 2014, 2015, we were transacting in the range of maybe less about $700 million in a year. And we were like, this is just not big enough. Sounds like big numbers, but in India, it's just not big enough. And we said that, we've got to become 10x of this.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not have a lot of capital and a lot of people to it. And that's when we thought about, we knew that technology is the answer, but we had to figure out what in technology is the answer. So that was really the problem statement about 3 years back, where we were saying that, we've got to figure out our answer to 10x growth. That was the big problem statement that was facing in 2014-15. I wouldn't say it's not a question right now, because we are trying to build a team to make it go 10x. But today's, I think the top problem statement that we are facing is, I personally think about it, how do I build a very, very strong management team? How do I build a very strong team which can take Echo for the next 5 years?
Yeah.
And before that, I think, before 2014, I think there were a lot of challenges around regulations. The banks were not, this concept of taking banking at the retail outlet. I've had multiple meetings with bankers saying that, this is blasphemy. How can you imagine doing a financial transaction at a retail outlet? The retailer is not safe. How do you imagine somebody cashing out without an ATM vault? What if counterfeit currencies? So multiple regulations, multiple trying to figure out, multiple answers. And over a period of time, thank goodness that, it has kind of, we've contributed to the entire industry evolving, but I think the regulators have done the job too.
Correct.
In understanding what the country needs.
Yeah. So in this place where you were talking, I heard you say another very interesting thing, and that is that you scaled up nationally very, very quickly. What were your challenges with, scaling up nationwide? Because when any other business tries to scale up, they don't look at the entire nation.
Actually, thanks for asking me this question. In 2014, 2015, all of $700 million that we were transacting was really in Delhi, Bombay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Greater Delhi, Greater Bombay, a few cities around it. And the problem that we were facing was, how do you become nationwide? And I think the best decision that we've taken in the last 3-4 years is of opening up the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not know how to deal with, for instance, we had the first competitor that we gave birth to, who started to take away our customers and our retailers. And to have the, I think, the have the resilience and the patience to say, this is what it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be enough of competition who may eat into our business, but eventually they'll have to create new markets.
Mm-hmm.
And it eventually became like that. So. It is, I think, even as far as Echo is concerned, we got to a lot more cities when such competition was there.
Mm.
So, for instance, there are there may be multiple cities that we entered after our competition had gone there. Okay. Obviously, competition which was kind of powered by Echo. So, they prepared the market we got into. And there were markets that we had prepared. So, in the initial days, Delhi, Bombay being the bigger markets, we were already present. So, they started to eat into our business. But later, they actually created a lot more fertile ground for us, where the scale-up was easier. So, in the scaling up across the country, I think our partners have done, I think, 80% of the heavy lifting.
Okay.
And about 20%, we kind of, that helped us create a lot of fertile ground for us to thereafter enter a few more cities that we wanted to do it ourselves.
Very interesting. So moving on, you said that you and your brother partnered to build Echo. What are the advantages and disadvantages of a partner in a startup? This would be an advice to every startup entrepreneur.
I would go to the extent to say, do not start if you do not have a co-founder.
Okay.
I think take your time, but find one. And I'm going through this experience through one of my friends. And he's run his company for about 4 years. He's not too happy with the co-founder that he's working with right now. And he's met a person while he's running his company. And he gave me a call a couple of days back saying, that guy is my co-founder. So I said, you know, you should now start it. And I think co-founders is super critical. I think it's one of the most important ingredients. I would recommend entrepreneurs not to start if you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's as important as finding the market or finding the product to get a really nice co-founder that one can actually trust. And I think the trust is, it's a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easy to find that person, but the ability to kind of go through the grind day in, day out over a very long period of time, I think takes a lot of doing.
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, that's very well said. If you don't have a co-founder, then
don't start. That would be my advice.
Amazing.
It's a tough journey anyways.
It is. In fact, you know, I completely agree with you because, you know, in 2003, when I founded Guardian, which grew into to be India's second largest chain of pharmacies, I didn't have a co-founder.
Mm.
And it was a very, very lonely job.
Yeah.
And I always wished I had a co-founder.
Yeah, so I can imagine.
I think
it is very,
these are very wise words from you.
Yeah, very lonely. Lonely and tough. So I think if it's tough, might as well have somebody do this alone.
Correct. So, you know, 12 years of Echo, nationwide presence, growing aggressively. What keeps you going every morning?
Interestingly, technology has made us very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether at whatever scale we are at, technology is evolving at the speed that we really can't imagine.
Mm.
And it continues to make our businesses very vulnerable. If you start to think from a year, 2 years standpoint, you know, maybe sometimes it doesn't affect us today, tomorrow perspective, but in a year, 2 year framework, I think if we do not innovate enough, if we do not learn how to get some of the newer trends into our businesses, it eventually hits our business pretty much. And personally, from 2007 to 2019, we've seen a few. You know, in 2007, there weren't smartphones. So we had to deal with coming off of smartphones. Now we are learning how to deal with a lot of data. You know, we used to think that the retailers may not have data. You know, we used to think that customers may not have data. But that's changing. We used to, you know, very large number of, about 60% of our customers, about 2 years back, would walk in with a feature phone. That number is down to about maybe about 30-35% now.
Mm.
And I can see that it's sub 10% in about 12 to 18 months time.
True.
And therefore, one has to continue thinking about the end consumer and the end retailer in our case, continue to understand their needs. And from Echo's experience, we would, you know, I would personally motivate my colleagues to look for answers in technology and look for answers in technology which are upwards in trend rather than technologies which are going down.
Mm. Interesting.
And often I think, you know, I have made this mistake of latching onto technologies which seem to be good but are declining. It is important to latch onto those technologies which are coming up, but maybe it's getting difficult to marry your customer base to that technology. But I would still urge people, entrepreneurs, my colleagues to push and think in that direction rather than latching onto something which is declining.
Interesting. So, next question would really be based on, you know, all your experience of building Echo. There must have been some failures.
Many.
What were some of your learnings from these failures?
Well, like I said, I think the biggest mistake, you know, very recently before I answer this question, there's a article which is, I think, running in one of these daily news papers, which says the biggest mistake that Bill Gates made. And I was reading that article and it says that he says that it was my place to be the Android in this world.
Mm.
We were the operating system. And there was space for one operating system to be non-iPhone.
Mm.
And it was our space, but we didn't see it.
Mm.
And I think the one big mistake that Echo did, and we took some time learning from it, is that in 2007, we started, India was all feature phone. But India was turning quickly into smartphone world. And the first time, you know, let's say my co-founder and I kind of interfaced with an Android, we said, this is not meant for our customers.
I see.
And I think that was the singular biggest mistake that we did. Okay. And we did not wake up to that until 2012-13. Because you continue, you know, you've latched onto a technology, yeah. then you've got to scale with that technology, you've got to live with that technology that you've built.
Very interesting.
Eventually to realize that, oh my goodness, that's our, I don't know, Microsoft moment or Kodak moment, whatever you want to call it.
Or Nokia moment.
Not the Nokia
Ericsson
moment.
Or Sony. I mean, yeah. There are so many companies.
There are so many. I agree with you. Just because there are larger people who've done those mistakes, it kind of gives us a story, okay, it's okay to do this mistake.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to acknowledge it and quickly change it as soon as possible. I think that was one big mistake. I wouldn't, you know, if we would have started it in 2010, we wouldn't have made this mistake. But because we started in 2007, it was all feature phone, we made this mistake.
Yeah. So final question, Abhinav, you know, thousands of people watch our podcasts and they will hear your interview. A lot of them are startup entrepreneurs. What would your advice be to all these people who want to start up?
I've often been asked this question and I have one advice, very important advice, that if people are wanting to start up really early. Mm. You know, I'm getting closer to 40 and there are success cases of people starting late 30s and making it really big, but I don't think so. The probability is on our side. Mm. You're a great example. But I would recommend that a lot of businesses in India are technology-led, and I would recommend really young students, you know, people passing out of IITs and great colleges, IIMs and great colleges, to start as soon as possible. Because we need to give ourselves a little bit of time to fail. It, you know, only I think 1% get really lucky to get it right in the first go. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, so you got to run your company, but there is life to deal with.
Correct.
And I guess the sooner you start, the better it is. That is one advice that I have felt it myself. I was the youngest in my family. I got that advantage. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents, you know, maybe for the first year, they were a little apprehensive about Abhinav quitting the job. But I got that advantage. I had a elder brother, elder sister. Mm-hmm. Even though we were from a middle-class family, I was not under tremendous pressure of, you know, sharing whatever I was earning. I think my elder sibling did go through that difficulty. But I think people should just start early.
Wonderful.
Think less, start early, figure out, because the journey is interesting.
Wonderful. And even if you fall, you have the time to
stand
up and run again.
Yeah, you have the time to stand up and, you know, try this again. Yeah.
Wonderful. Abhinav, thank you very much for coming to our show.
Thank you so much for having
really,
me.
Really, very grateful that you come and shared such amazing comments and thoughts about Echo. And good luck. I sincerely hope Echo will be there with all the 1.3 billion people in our country.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you and see you next week.